So we'll take questions from the entire day so far, but it has to be, again, relevant to the topics from today. So, okay, the question here, the sisters have not submitted any questions yet, so I'm just going to start with the brothers until I see the sisters' questions. Does the forbidding of evil apply to non-Muslims as well, i.e., for instance, backbiting in the workplace or other forms of sin that is completely okay to non-Muslims, like drinking, etc.? So, forbidding of evil in the context of like, for instance, backbiting in the workplace, yeah, that the principle of backbiting also applies when it comes to non-Muslims as well. And so the general idea of forbidding evil, yes, forbidding evil meaning should we want, like, okay, so the forbidding of evil when it comes to non-Muslims, like, we should want what's best for every single person we interact with. And for someone who doesn't believe in Allah, ultimately it's that they believe in Allah. So, you know, whether they leave their bad habits or not, it's a little bit less relevant because first they have to come to Allah. Now, yes, sometimes by encouraging them to live a goodly life, their heart will soften. Eventually it comes toward Allah. So yes, we should want them to live a goodly life. We don't want our non-Muslim colleagues or peers to like be gambling or drinking their life away. We should want what's best for them. Now, does that mean we have to speak with them about this? Not necessarily, right? I mean, again, if you set an example, they're going to come to you. Guaranteed they're going to come to you. And they're going to ask you, what do I do? And when someone comes to you and asks, what do I do? You have them, right? But if you start on your own approaching them and reprimanding them, it's probably not going to go anywhere. Oh, there is an interest question. How would someone avoid the open sin of people using or contributing to usury or interest when it is all around us? How would you advise someone who is older than you the proper way? So the first thing is that I have to make sure that I myself am not engaging in interest. And when it's all around us, yeah, it is all around us. So, you know, maybe supporting those causes that are trying to remove interest. First of all, what is the most common, you know, form of interest people are engaging in this day and age? Credit card interest, right? So tell me, I mean, is there any financial advisor or anyone who understands wealth management or money in any way, does anyone ever advise getting into credit card debt? No one does because the APR is ridiculously high. But so many people are in it. So both Muslims and non-Muslims alike, we should be really discouraging credit card use, you know, unless it's being paid off right away. So that's something that's just common ground, right? I mean, I see my colleagues at work and they're in this credit card debt, and I really, really wish that they don't have to deal with that. When they talk about it, we discuss it. So rather than, you know, what's the controversial one? It's like college education. So maybe just shift our attention away from that. The people that are dealing with it will deal with that. But the stuff that's common to the common person that they should probably get rid of anyway, which is credit card debt, make that the point of focus. So I don't think that you can not, so maybe that should be a priority, right? Which is like things like credit card debt. Someone who's older than you, how would you advise them? I don't know. If they approach you, that's different. And they say, how should I get out of debt? Or how should I avoid interest? Okay, the ball's in your court. Now you can say something. But can you approach someone who's older or has more life experience than you and say, what's wrong with you? This is haram. I don't think it's going to work. Again, I could be wrong. And I apologize if I'm, you know, mispresenting this. And maybe I don't have enough life experience. I'll put that out there. I just haven't in my own life and in experience in dealing with so many people over the years seen that to be an effective way. I just think it's easier when... Because in this day and age, like, yeah, maybe it works in certain parts of the world, but in America, nobody wants to hear from anyone what they have to do. So now you're going to come, you know, with the religious stick in your hand and try to... I just don't think it's going to work. Sometimes as parents, is there a place or responsibility to be forceful with your children? Is it closer to the sunnah to always be gentle and remind and encourage children? That's a good question. It's funny because like there's like these jokes nowadays that like you can never say anything to your child. Anyway, something really funny is coming to mind. So yes, so disciplining so there's a difference between children and the rest of the world. There's a responsibility that a parent has with a child that they don't have with anyone else on the planet. Because Allah Ta'ala specifically talks about in the Quran, قُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ وَأَهْلِيكُمْ نَارًا. Protect yourself and your family, right? Your household. So you have a responsibility of ensuring success for your children, ensuring the opportunities of success for your children that you don't necessarily have with your neighbor, with your parents, you don't have with the imam, the people in the masjid, your colleagues, you don't have that responsibility. So yes, there is absolutely a role of discipline. And there has to be a balance, and I'm not a parenting expert in any way, but there has to be a balance between force, aggression, not physical, but there has to be a balance between reprimanding them in a more forceful way and in a gentle way. So there has to be a balance between the two. And so you can, hopefully that answers the question, inshallah. Okay, so there's a question of, is this true of non-Muslims? I think the question is forbidding evil and, this general principle of, so to non-Muslims, you may not want them to start praying because they don't believe in Allah and they're praying whereas you might want your sibling to pray because they believe in Allah. But generally speaking, do we want them to appreciate and come to Allah? Yeah, that should be deep within our heart. Now, am I going to be giving dawah, at school or at work? No, not verbally. My presence should be enough. My presence, if they see my character, they see that I'm, taking time to pray, I'm fasting the month of Ramadan, I'm sacrificing for other people, I'm giving up, something at work so that, they can go ahead. And they see this in my character, they know, you really don't have to open your mouth and give them a pamphlet and say, read this and come back to me in 3 days once you've completed it and I have a pop quiz. They know. So you should want it in your heart, and your Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar essentially is your presence and your desire that they transform their lives as well. If any of this stuff happens with family, for instance, like at a wedding, is it acceptable to leave quietly? So family is a little bit difficult. And the reason I say that is because you have to juggle between the responsibility that you have toward your family, and that includes silatul rahm. So as a general principle, we have a responsibility of maintaining family ties, which we don't have with the general community. So you have to juggle that responsibility with, for instance, an environment that isn't supportive of deens, for instance, some of the weddings. So I'm not going to be able to directly answer this question, but you have to juggle the two. If it's completely inappropriate, where the benefit of you maintaining Silatul Rahm is outweighed by the risk of the environment, okay, so then maybe you balance that. You decide to leave. If it's that there's a little bit of, problematic behavior, but the benefit of them seeing you still care about them, you want to be there, especially at wedding times, it's like very sensitive, you may have to make that decision. When in doubt, you can do mashwara on the individual scenario, but the silatul rahim, you can't ignore it and just say blanketly that, I'm never going to compromise on anything. This, if there's a scenario where you might have to compromise, it's not your friend's wedding, it's not your, far removed from whatever, second cousin, it's that the first cousins, the relatives, where you may have to be a little bit more careful. Okay, there's a question. Earlier we talked about fasting, and there's a question here about, I was talking at the end about how, as believers who are trying to strive, our sacrifices should be toward, our sacrifices should be by cutting food out of our lives rather than sacrificing for the pursuit of food. So the question is, foodie culture feels like the only fun Muslim young thing people can do nowadays. Muslim young people can do. What replacement can we do instead? And I understand. I mean, it's not haram, right? So it's not haram to be a foodie. It's not haram to, drive 75 miles to have a burger and things like that. So we're not talking about, so if you feel like you're at a stage in your faith where maybe you just accepted Islam or maybe you just came to deen and this is all kind of new to you, I would encourage you to be the best foodie on the planet. But if you've now moved past that and you're now experimenting with fasting beyond Ramadan, you're doing Mondays and Thursdays, you're fasting the white days, you're trying to really suppress your nafs, in that scenario, this conflicts a little bit with it, right? Because my sacrifice when it comes to food in general, should be to keep my stomach empty as much as possible rather than as full as possible. And similarly, when I'm trying to encourage other people toward goodness, I should be encouraging people toward, pursuing, if I'm going to expend energy on traveling long distances or shooting a video so I can share where I ate, maybe that energy could go towards something a bit more useful for my akhirah or for the community at large. Like, I don't know, I can go volunteer at a homeless shelter. I can go volunteer at the nursing home. I know I'm being a little idealistic here, but I'm just saying, if you and I have the energy to do these things, for those of us that are striving, there are other ways that we can promote goodness for the community. Pounding calories into people's mouths and stomachs is not good as a whole, and it's not good for the nafs and for the nafs of the community either. Okay, so this is not a question, it's a statement. Spouse is stating, don't wake me up for prayer, meaning Fajr. You will go to your grave, I will go to mine. I won't answer that exact question, but you know, this question of like, how do I bring my wife or my husband up to the same, up to par with where I am, for instance. This is a big question that comes up. All these brothers attend the retreat. They go home Sunday morning, and now they're like wondering why the house is like upside down and why, you know, my wife isn't praying on time, and the wife attends the retreat because the husband's at home, and she comes home and says, you know, how come all these men are praying at the masjid, and look at you, you're just, you know, whatever, watching college football all day. So the general advice I would give goes back to the principle of like, if I focus on myself and my own heart, the people around me are going to change. It's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. This is proven. Children are exception because I have a responsibility to discipline my child, but I don't have a responsibility to discipline my spouse. It's not one of the responsibilities I have. My responsibility toward my wife, for instance, is to make sure that that I provide shelter for her, that I provide food for her, et cetera, et cetera. The responsibility that a wife has toward her husband, again, similarly, is not that, you know, she instills. Yeah. Now, is it nice to have a working relationship where the wife is receptive to the husband's feedback, the husband's receptive to the wife's feedback? Yeah, that would be ideal. But that scenario doesn't seem like it's one where it's going to work out well, right? So the more I focus on myself, if through deen coming into my life, through, let's say, the principles of dhikr and the principles of Quran entering into my heart, what's the ultimate effect of these things penetrating me? It's not that I just become, quote unquote, more righteous in my relationship with Allah. It's that these changes now extend into my character and to my relationships with other people. And so my parents begin to see that something special about him or her. And my spouse begins to see, I don't know what it is, but since he started going to those gatherings, all of a sudden he's, you know, really just becoming a much better person and someone I want to be around, and he's treating me more kindly, et cetera, et cetera. And vice versa, the wife to the husband as well. Automatically, they're going to want to follow, do whatever you're doing. Whatever Kool-Aid you're drinking, where can I get some? Right? So I think that's probably a better way to look at it. At work, non-Muslim coworkers listening to music, you can't leave the spot, but you feel bad in your heart. Are you responsible for not stopping them? So the work environment is not your environment. So the first question you should ask is this a place that I have control over or not? So for instance, the four walls of my home that I either own or rent, I can make the rules there, right? But other places that I go, like the store or to other public places or the workplace, I don't own that place. So I can't enforce rules, right? In my heart, I can feel bad and I can want something different. And I myself can avoid areas that are problematic, but I can't be the one that enforces rules. This is not under my jurisdiction. So if music at work is loud enough that it's a distraction for people, and honestly, often it is, well then yeah, you should probably use that as a reason to cut it down. But if it's some light music, one of your colleagues playing in their office or on the side on their own, you know, you just have to feel bad in your heart and hope that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala finds a way for them to turn it off. Maybe they start getting migraine and they don't want music playing anymore, right? I mean, don't make that dua, but things happen. Okay, would forcing a child to do fard actions, for instance, praying, wearing hijab, fasting, lead to insincerity in the child's hearts? Meaning do it to please the parents instead of pleasing Allah. So no, it's not, because children have to get into the habit of doing certain things, and we can't expect that there's pure sincerity for the sake of Allah. I mean, how many times do you tell your child, hey, you finish this juz, you know, I'm going to get you, you know, whatever, we're going to go to a Pistons game. I was going to say Lions, but you have to cough up like $800 for that. So maybe that's like a hifz gift or marriage gift or something. So you know, we do that, right? So it's a source of encouragement. The intention isn't there. To be honest, you can even do this for yourself. I was talking to someone earlier today. They were like, I really struggle with reading Quran every day. It was one of our, whatever, I met with someone. And I said, okay, you should make it a goal. Then on the wall, you're going to put up a calendar. And every single day, your goal is to read 2 minutes of Quran. And every day, you're gonna cross it off on the wall. And at the end of the month, if you do it, your family, they're going to treat you to a nice dinner. Now you could say, well, now I'm doing it for the sake of the dinner. Okay, that's fine. But where did the motivation come to even start this anyway, right? It came because you realized you needed a relationship with the Quran. Similarly, your children need to develop a relationship with the Quran. So you can have as many sub-intentions as possible. The ultimate motive is to connect them with Allah and the Prophet ﷺ. So you're going to have to use all these reward methods. And honestly, you could use these on yourselves. You can use these with your spouses. You can use this with the community. You donate this much, you get this. Okay, yeah, I mean, you could say, well, I'm doing it for the sake of whatever that... No, I mean, you can put your money somewhere else. You can go on a vacation instead. Your ultimate goal is to please Allah. Sometimes you're going to have these sub-intentions just to facilitate that prior goal, that ultimate goal. You know, we woke up for Tahajjud this morning. And you don't have to raise your hands, but how many people, don't raise your hand, but how many people that were not in i'tikaf this morning prayed Tahajjud at home at 6 o'clock in the morning? Don't raise your hand. Just answer the question in your own mind. How many people prayed Tahajjud this morning? Right? I would venture to say probably most didn't, right? And honestly, if I was at home, maybe I wouldn't either. So does that mean that the people that all prayed Tahajjud today in the masjid did so because everyone else was doing it, so they had to do it anyway, right? Maybe. But why did they sign up for the retreat to begin with, right? So in the retreat, there's all these other intentions. Maybe now I'm extending my prayer because someone's watching. Maybe now I'm going to eat a little bit less because people, fine, all that's fine. But your ultimate objective of signing up for the retreat was, I need to reconnect myself with Allah. So whatever happens after this, whatever it happens, right? So... So it's completely fine to do so. In fact, it will. Oftentimes, you should do this. Now, the question about forcing a child to do farḍ actions. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily helpful. But convincing them or using wisdom to get them to do something, even if it's for a slightly wrong motive, yes, that's fine. But forcing them, you know, with a stick in hand or threatening them with a punishment if they don't do it. You tell me if that's effective or not. I don't think it's effective. If it is, then talk to the person who needed help with that fajr, and maybe you can give them advice. Fajr of the spouse. Okay, no more questions?